Okay, welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we're Rickety and Crunchy, and we're watching Krull from 1983, directed by Peter Yates. Awesome score by James Horner. He'd just come off doing Star Trek II and was just about to do Aliens. Well, not just about to do Aliens, but he was getting there. It's definitely influenced by all the Star Wars movies, but it also has that, like, sword and sandal sci-fi effect that was big in the 80s. The more I think about it, as a kid, I think these were almost... There were so many of these movies made when I was a kid that I kind of, like... I think as a kid, grew up thinking that was just what entertainment was it was just adventure movies and stuff. And they made a lot of good ones. This one I actually don't really have much nostalgia for because I didn't see it till it was on Sci-Fi Channel when I was, like, in high school. So I didn't even know about it.
I was not alive when this was made.
Yeah.
Aww.
But I still posit...
Almost!
It's not a perfect movie, but what I was saying to you, Malcolm, it's the S's. It's the score, it's the scenery, and it's the sidekicks.
And the sexual tension.
And the sexy, of course. It's multiple S's. The Krull is all about the S's.
Soothsayer.
And the soothsayer, of course, too. Yes. The old one. I'm not going to relay the plot, because if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't seen Krull, you know, you can kick rocks. Or whatever the kids like to say these days. I think they also say that. How many of you guys had seen Krull before?
Yeah.
Everybody but Malcolm? So Malcolm was a newbie.
I have only seen the scene where that guy gets crunched in the rocks when I was a very little kid.
Well, that's like the most traumatic scene to see.
I'd give you nightmares for sure.
The Cyclops getting crunched. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's the thing that kind of sticks with me about the movie is that, like, you have all these sidekick characters, and a lot of them actually get killed. It's like, it kind of grounds that, like, this journey has, like, a cost. It's not like a lot of these adventure stories sometimes where, you know, everyone makes it out okay, and everyone pairs off, and goes off, and, you know, like, oh, those two guys are going to be buddies, and those two that were bickering are going to get married, and blah, 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 and everything else. It's like, you know, a lot of people died. Most of the people died, and they died horribly.
But it seems like in these, like, sci-fi adventure movies, their deaths are, like, almost like a willing sacrifice. Like, no!
Well, yeah, and you add...
Goodbye, remember me, this is for a willing cause.
You add...
Whereas nowadays, it's like, no, I'm not gonna die!
Yeah, no, they definitely... You add that extra level of, like, the fantasy side, and the idea of, like, well, they're doing this for, I don't know, their sons or something, you know, with the criminals, in their case, they're doing it for that. Yeah, it's... I think it's a movie that, like, I kind of like more each time I see it. But for the most part, it's definitely kind of a process to get through, I think, sometimes. It's slow in places. We had fun, I think, with it, because we were able to kind of be familiar enough with it to just sort of joke as it was going along. And we had our running commentary about the gooseberries. Matt made a great comment about the fact that it could do with a few more montages and a few less, like, we don't need to see every step of him climbing this mountain. And even though the music is really good, they're definitely relying way too heavily on the music in some of these less than exciting scenes of just kind of moving along. What does it say? Does it have the length on it? Or the
it is 121 minutes.
So it's over 2 hours for an 80s movie, an 80s fantasy movie. They definitely were pushing it. There's about 40 minutes that could have gone. I mean, NeverEnding Story is like 87 minutes. I feel like this, if this movie were 90 minutes, it would be a lot better.
Well, that end scene where, you know, like, the ship was dismantling, that was like 20 minutes.
Yeah, that took a while. I think they kind of felt, they were clearly kind of in love with their scenery and their effects in some cases.
Got all these fireworks,
that.
Let's blow them up.
Yeah, exactly.
Very beautiful scenery.
The glaive, oh man, that spinning glaive was just... working on that wall for a while.
Yeah, I always feel like that. Like that's the first time he uses it, and he uses it for such a sort of oddly utilitarian purpose, and you're just like, okay, I guess it's an ultimate weapon. It never quite grounds. I mean, the promise of the glaive is always more than, like, the result. To its credit, this is a movie that's written with, like, implications of, like, potential further adventures, but there's a lot of closure, too. You know, the bad guy is taken care of. Many people, you know, die or whatever. And that's and like it has some darker elements, like with the old man talking to his ex-girlfriend and all this stuff. We're like, wow, they really did a lot to sort of build a world within like the short constraints of basically an adventure quest. So in that sense, I don't know, I enjoy it. It's one I'd probably watch every three to five years and have some fun with it.
Perhaps some of the worst fight choreography, though.
Yeah, the fighting is kind of uninspired.
Oh, man. I think their strategy is waving your stick around in front of your body, you know, you don't get stabbed.
It's clearly, even from the first scene, you can see it's clearly going for that, like, old-fashioned adventure, you know, Adventures of Robin Hood kind of, you know, swing from the chandelier, swashbuckling kind of stuff. And at least it sort of stays wide to a degree, so they're, you know, the choreography isn't the greatest, the fighting isn't the greatest, it's not like the actors have all been through, like, heavy training, but at least it doesn't do, I mean, the stuff I hate now, not everyone's too bad about this, is, like, the shaky cam, jump in front, like, edit around the fact that the people don't really know how to fight kind of stuff.
Jason Bourne staff.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool in small doses and used appropriately, and I think Greengrass knows what he's doing with it for the most part there, but I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of those movies. I'd like to like them more, and I might revisit them, but people love those Bourne movies, and I'm like, I like spy movies, but I just don't know. Anyway, we're not talking about spy movies. I'm all crawl.
Is the idea that this castle's coming from the future? Because they'll have, like, way more advanced, much, but they'll only have laser guns. Right.
Well, I think the idea is that the castle is coming from, like it's another conquered dimension. It's conquered multiple worlds. It's basically like an alien.
Stole somebody else's laser
guns. I want to point out, I don't know if any of you guys have seen the movie The Hidden.
No.
That the creatures that are the slayers, when they kill them, if you see, it's like this, like
worm thing,
slug worm.
Yeah. I thought they would expand on that later, like they'd actually catch one, or you'd see
right,
it at
that,
some
that would
point.
Be cool.
They're under the ground. Well, they're under the ground.
There was a point where they caught them in the net.
Yeah, they had that one.
They caught them in the net, stabbed it, and then it just nothing happened. Yeah,
I was like, oh, now they've caught one in the net. We're going to see the weird tentacle thing,
kind of unexplored. But yeah, the squid alien things look vaguely reminiscent of these aliens that are in this movie called The Hidden that actually, like, travel, like, they're parasites and they travel through different host bodies. So I'm going to say that The Hidden is a sequel to Krull. Here on the podcast, I'm making that claim. Listeners can write in if they want to dispute it. We'll see. Commentary.
Do you think they recycle, like, does that actually happen? Do they recycle, like, props and stuff from other movies?
Oh, yeah. They recycle shit. I mean,
I mean, reuse it.
I mean, repurpose.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, Firefly. Like, there's the train episode of Firefly. Those are the exact like armor that they wear in Starship Troopers.
Really?
Like 100%.
Yeah, I bet we can
do like
that.
Set
so is the rule like as long as within the same studio, you can just borrow whatever shit you want? Like, yeah, just open the closet. You'll see what's in this bin.
It's possible. I mean.
How are they not copyrighting
the,
she's out?
That's true, but the famous thing, of course, is the pterodactyls at the beginning of Citizen Kane.
What?
Like, they're supposed to be birds that are, like, squawking over his ominous mansion, but I guess it's just, like, old footage from, like, King Kong or something. and then if you've seen the end of, like, not the director's cut, but the end of, like, the theatrical cut of Blade Runner, and it's got the voiceover, it's footage from, what's the Kubrick movie?
Shining.
The Shining, yeah.
Yeah,
The Shining.
I was like, I should know this and watch that movie.
Yeah, and then the unicorn scenes in Blade Runner's director's cut are taken from
Legend.
There you go.
Really?
So.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So, Legendologist here, so that's awesome.
It says on the back of the box that the name of the planet is Krull, but do they ever mention that in the movie?
The voiceover guy at the beginning says.
The voiceover guy at the beginning, of course.
I heard it again, too. I think it was the old one said it.
Possibly, yeah. Good. Yeah, they did mention, I think it was about like three times, I think they specifically said, like, somebody might have said, all of Krull can't, or something like that.
I always wonder how they name these things, like, there's any kind of etymology behind this.
It's
like,
got
kind of
a weird name to it, for sure. I don't know, I mean, in some ways it's definitely, I give it credit for not just being, like, 100% Star Wars ripoff. I mean, it's ripping off a lot of stuff, but, like, classic fairy tale type stuff. And the weird ambition to kind of do, like, a blended genre even slightly, being like with that little bit of sci-fi elements, you know, lasers and and space alien castle and stuff.
And fairy princess.
Fairy princess is the classic, you know, thing. And they give her a little bit to do. I mean, it's no, you know, gender progressive kind of story. But then again, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, she was not an idle prisoner. No. She was running around nonstop.
Yeah, trying to get out of the belly of the beast or whatever was going on with that.
Right.
Which was kind of imaginative, like I said.
And they never explain, like, why he wants to marry this or make her his princess. Does she have, like, some kind of power? Like, if he marries her, then he rules that world or some shit?
It certainly seemed like there was something there.
But at the same time, it's like, you choose this pitiful planet?
Yeah.
And I shit this place. And let's get out of here.
I mean, it's one of those movies that I feel like, as much as I like the movie... Yeah, she can do the fire stuff.
He wanted a fire.
As much as I like it, I feel like there could be a good remake of this done. I think with I mean, but I don't know. Like, there are parts of it that I really do like, and I don't know. Maybe not even a remake. Maybe just like a sequel. Maybe just like take the elements that are in the movie and then just kind of do something new with it.
A sequel.
Seacrawl.
Nice.
That would be good. That would be good. You're banned. No, if I had to start banning people for puns, then I would be the first to leave. Impressions. I mean, I won't be the only one talking here. Let's cut into it. Let's crawl it up.
Remind me a lot about Lord of the Rings, kind of like the whole journeying element and meeting all these interesting folk. And then
it's total RPG quest stuff, and the end is like a boss fight from any classic NES game.
What's the term for the god machine kind of thing?
Deus Machina?
Yeah, basically they're blazing saddle horses, kind of the same thing as the eagles in Lord of the Rings. Like, why didn't they just have these from the fucking beginning? Sail to that, but like, if you knew, okay, there's these magical horses that'll cut this trip like by an eighth, why don't we just go and find the horses instead of journeying to the castle? Doesn't that seem logical?
I mean, I think that its pacing is kind of problematic, but it is kind of doing a lot. But where I think that still is kind of strong is, like, most of the journey is them just solving the problem of figuring out where the castle's going to even be. And so once they know that, then they pretty quickly get with, like, now we need to get there fast. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's less to be called upon than, like, the eagle concern, where it's like, well, if they always knew about the eagles, then they know Mount Doom stays where it is. It's not like Mount Doom is moving every other day.
I kind of wonder if when they're writing these things, if the studio's like, okay, here's the deal, kids. We need a spider. We need a moving castle.
Yeah.
A magical weapon and a princess. Write it into the script. And then they just, I guess we have to have these things. I don't know.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, Joseph Campbell was there on set to be like, here's the pieces you need for a classic hero's journey.
They needed oatmeal wrestling.
There was a decided lack of oatmeal wrestling in that movie.
No, there was the mud pit.
There was a whole lot of oats in there.
You're right.
Yeah, it was a good flick. I liked it better than I thought I would.
Well, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Malcolm.
He does look a little bit like Han Solo on the cover, though.
Nice. Well, Han Solo is all about it. Like Ice Pirates, which I think we might do at some point.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen Ice Pirates?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Matt hasn't seen it. Malcolm hasn't seen it.
I don't think I've seen it.
She hasn't seen it.
Oh, we watch it at Mom and Dad's house.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It'll be like...
Was I asleep? Because that doesn't count.
I'm wondering if this Cyclops dude got some kind of terrible rash on his face. Remember when, like, latex covering his, upper head the whole time?
How... You pointed out when he was running in
through
that
the
scene.
Swamp with
how
your
is the Cyclops
fucking
see?
Eyes
I don't
covered?
See any way for him to see
there
out of that thing.
So
at
many
all.
Problematic. Like this was must have been a tough movie to make.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I think they had fun. Hopefully, but like just even like wrangling the fire mayor scene.
That looks so crazy,
and it looks really dangerous.
Like the biggest damn horses. Jumping all over the cliffs. Oh my god!
When we were shooting River of Skulls
it's
and having
exactly
to deal
what
with
I was
like
thinking about.
One. Horse,
I know.
And how much extra time it took
Terrifying.
To get that thing organized. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Oh! Oh! That's the best one ever.
I'm out.
I'm out.
Drop the mic.
Really awesome set.
You guys can try to figure out if someone were.
I know. So the first time they showed the swamp,
yeah.
And you can't tell. But then you could tell.
Yeah.
It was like two suns, like 2 feet off the ground with trees behind the suns. Okay, those aren't suns.
I want to buy a hangar. I think that's what I gotta do.
A big, you know what no one's capitalized on? I don't know if it's still there, but I want to say that somewhere in like outside of, somewhere in Ohio, there is a Zeppelin hangar, like a giant Zeppelin hangar. Yeah, I read a book about Zeppelins. Yeah. Once it was like a children's book, but I read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, of course.
I get it.
Airships.
Yeah, pulled together our life savings and pop on that.
Well, no, but I mean, like, it'd be like a weird place to, you know, get away from Hollywood and go shoot, have a giant set there.
Probably great tax incentives for
most people are probably pretty smart about that, yeah.
Isn't Ohio Japanese for good morning? I think it is.
It is,
by the way.
If it is, you call it Good Morning Studios and you're good to go. There we go. You heard it here first on the Zeppelin hangar in Ohio to shoot Krull 2. The Krullening. So you gotta get the glaive back in Krull 2, though, right?
That's right. He never does get his stupid glaive back. He basically went through all this, like it's the legendary weapon, pulls out of the frickin' lava pit. Just leaves it lodged in the monster's chest.
Would Krull 2 be the sun?
Oh, yeah.
Ruling the galaxy? So the sun would have to go into space
to
retrieve the glaive.
Because he got sucked up in space.
And he would have to learn in his own way that he never needed the glaive. It was all about flamethrower love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Maybe he meets like a regular Earth girl. And that's the princess that he needs. And you tell like half the story from her perspective, and you make it more like pro femo, and it's like more like she does more stuff, is awesome and stuff. And he's kind of like a wimp and taken care of because it's like, oh, you're Prince of the Galaxy, and we don't have to worry about that stuff, kid. And it's like his ship crashes on Earth.
Oh,
some kind of
does
talk.
He inherit the raisinette or giant nipples of his father?
It's possible.
That's like, how you know he's of royal blood. That's how you know he's of royal blood is the nipples.
Giant nipples.
Raisin smugglers.
Yeah, they were big for a man.
I would say they were respectable nipples.
Okay.
Like, I wasn't offended by them. They weren't, poking me in the eye or anything.
There was just that scene on the steps.
I think it was all about the light.
But that scene was for the ladies. I mean, you got the rippling chest or whatever.
Nippling chest.
Rippling abs and nippling chest.
Rippling nips.
And the guys get the princess with the flowing dress running through, you know, the GI track of the monster. And ladies get the giant nips on the prince.
Yeah.
That weird intestine claw, that was something else.
Yeah, threw you off. You're like, it's Giger, but...
Yeah.
The like, claw penis thing. Yeah.
Never really get a sense of the scale of the monster, because in some scenes his hand is like holding the princess, and then other scenes he's kind of like this off-distance monster that he's hucking this...
Yeah.
Boomerang at, and you never really...
You get a sense that, like, the monster, when they sort of try to show it, like, it looks like it was, like imaginatively designed, and it's horrific and everything, but it's probably one of those, like, alien kind of things where, like, if you just shot regular light on it, showed it in a wide shot, it would just look like a guy in a suit. So they have to do this, like, fuzzy view, and, I mean, I feel like it's kind of imaginative the way that they kind of make his presence abstract, like, where, you know, you got the claws, you get, like, is she inside of him? Is he talking to her? And so it's all just this kind of ethereal thing, like, maybe he doesn't really have, like, an actual form and an actual body of existence, you know, like, he says he can be any form or take on any form.
Right, and for the rest of the movie, he's, like, given these really ridiculous monologues, shape-shifting, and then at the end, he's just, like, a sea monster, like,
I
mean, don't do it.
That could have been another obstacle that would have been good. Is like if he does do this form stuff, that maybe like they have to get him in the right form.
I was kind of waiting for him to turn into the princess with the black eyes and be like, "Oh, give me a fire, psycho."
That would have been good.
That would have been a good one.
And then the old switcheroo. But they did that with a seer, kind exactly. of. So yeah. It would have been going back to the well there.
It could have turned into Colwyn. He had to fight himself.
Yeah.
That also would have been every man's fantasy. I would really like to fight myself.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say have sex with myself and then fight myself. But it could just be one or the other.
Right.
I would say fight first, then sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fighter and a lover. Best of both worlds. It's a full package.
And then the sex turns into a fight. That's my fantasy. My fantasy.
Yes. Yes. You find yourself wrestling in a pool of oats.
Yes.
Ooh. Or a river of jam.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Sexy jam river.
Down by jam river.
Well, Matt, did you want to share your recipe for the glaive cake that you were talking about earlier?
What you got to do is just make a custom pie pan that's shaped like a glaive, only way chunkier. And then you, like, pour cake batter in, and you bury a glaive in there, cook that sucker up. And then you get yourself a glaive cake. You get to eat the cake. You
put strawberry jam on it.
Yeah, you can slather the jam on. You can even have like a bucket full of jam so you can reach in and get it.
Do you think they...
eat the cake, get the glaive. It's like, you know, the toy in the box.
Do you think best they toy. Store the glaive in the conglaive? Maybe.
Yes, they do.
Probably.
Everyone's got puns tonight, huh?
Mine wasn't very good. No,
that's okay. It's
better ones.
It's okay.
I appreciated it.
It's okay.
I liked it.
We forget.
To the gunblade.
So anyone have... Wait, so I shared that this is a weird, almost nostalgia, but not really a nostalgia movie for me. I feel like I would love this movie to death if I saw it mm-hmm. when I was 10, but I didn't. I saw it when I was like 16. And the score pulled me through it a lot for the most part. It still kind of does. When did any of you guys see it? What stories of Krull?
This is another one of those weird movies that my dad would always make me watch. Like, he would watch Time Bandits over and over again whenever it came on TV.
Yeah.
And Krull. And I'm trying to think Conan, but Conan's pretty great.
Conan is yeah. objectively great. Time Bandits is kind of like this, but
it is.
It's slow in that yeah. first half with Napoleon, then it gets going and I enjoy mm-hmm. it.
Well, speaking of Conan, too, when you mentioned Krull, I thought you were talking about Cole the Conqueror. I was a little excited when I first heard that.
Oh, no, you guys, I haven't seen that. I heard that the one thing I know about that movie is, like, it's got this inexplicable, like, not death metal, but, like, thrash metal score that just doesn't fit with it at all.
Oh, no, it's great.
No. But I heard that Milius, like, really pushed and, like, was, like, for the budget and, like, to make it so they could have, like, a big epic score for Conan, and it matters. Like, it's... I like Destroyer. Does anyone else also like Conan the Destroyer?
I can't remember. Is that the one where he punches the camel in the first part?
No, he punches the camel in Conan, I think.
Is it the first one? Okay.
No, he might do it in both of them. I know he gets drunk and blah, blah.
The camel's always spitting on him. I know that. But I can't remember which one he punches it in. That's my... Whatever that one is,
Conan the Destroyer is the one with Wilt Chamberlain. And,
yeah, that one's great.
And the princess, and... Yeah, yeah.
And which one is he working out with rocks?
That's the first one.
Is that the first one?
That's the first
one. I'm really working.
We have to do all the...
bonding and gumming.
Yeah, where they take him as a child and they make him do all the labor.
Yeah.
The wheel of
walking, yeah.
The wheel, yeah.
So the second one.
So you've seen it a bunch then.
What, Krull?
Yeah.
4 or 5 times, but again, it's always one of those things like, oh god, we have to watch this again, and I just go do something else.
That's
so you got duped into coming over here to watch this.
Oh, no.
And as soon as it comes on, he's like, oh, no, do we have to watch this?
Well, I mean, when you posted the picture, I saw the glaive, and I was like, ah, okay.
Okay, so you knew.
Yeah.
I think I saw it too young. And it sort of melded with, like, other movies
right.
that had come out later. So it confused my young mind. I was like, is that from that movie? I don't know. But it was like, I just remembered, like, cool parts of this movie. Like, the spider scene. And,
right.
And, like, you know, the swamp. And got that confused with Never Ending Story.
Which
and I was
is
like, no,
easy,
there's this
right?
other.
Yeah.
There's this other movie, I swear. And people never knew what I was talking about. So... Like, you're crazy. Okay, well, yeah, but I swear there's another movie, yeah. So it was nice to see it again.
And be justified.
Like, aware of, like, oh, this is actually a movie, okay. It's not just something I made up in my mind.
That's always nice to have that bit of, like, justification and closure for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I do have that like memory of that guy getting crushed, and I could never figure out what that was from until tonight. Yeah.
Wow, we helped two people out.
Yeah,
this is like this is the good deal of
childhood closure.
Yeah, like, oh, I saw this weird movie.
A lot of healing happened.
Mm-hmm. I had that happen with a movie called The Quiet Earth that I saw when I was like, you know, like 14 or something. I saw like the last 20 minutes of it. And it was this post-apocalyptic movie. It was made in New Zealand, and the premise is like that there's like only a handful of people that are still alive, and something that some organization did, like basically wiped out everybody, and it's still going, and like it's going to cause something terrible to happen. So one of the guys who works for the organization that's still alive, like, is going to go and he like crashes a truck into this satellite dish or something to stop it from transmitting and. And ends up, like, then he wakes up, and you think he's dead or whatever, but he wakes up, and he's on this beach, and this music's all, like, epic and stuff, and he looks out, and, like, the horizon goes out, and then there's, like, this giant, like, planet with, like, a Saturn ring, and he just sort of, like, stands before it in, like, a giant long shot, and I'm like, that was an awesome way to end a movie. And I could never remember what it was or anything, because it was one of those, like, you can see it on TV, and you catch the end of it. You don't, you know, we don't have the resources. It's not like the internet back, and even now with the internet, sometimes you cannot find little things you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll YouTube stuff all the time and be like, come on, that part from that one movie, and it's like, here's the whole movie. It's like, I don't want the whole movie. It's like, here's the whole, no.
Yeah.
Damn it. But, yeah, so that's cool that, like, Kroll was like that for you guys, I guess, that you got that kind of closure.
A little bit.
What about you, Matt?
I've seen it a couple times, yeah, but... It does blend into a lot of other movies, for sure. Yeah. Good times. That spider was really impressive.
Yeah.
The stop motion spider.
Good.
It must have taken so long. All those legs.
Yeah.
It looked really good. Some movies will do, like, the cheap puppet spider, and it's like all the legs move at once or something.
Oh, God, I hate
it's
that.
So bad.
They're like just they're dragging a rubber
mm-hmm.
tarantula around. His legs are going all over the place.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if they did some sort of trick photography where they shot maybe like a real spider or something.
Well, it had
weird,
a totally
like,
weird like translucent.
Yeah,
I don't think it's
it was
a real
very
spider.
Strange. I don't know what a real spider looks like, but mm-hmm. I'm not a spiderologist, so I can't speak to that.
It creeped me out, so it was animated well, I guess.
Definitely, yeah. I would give Kroll out of 5 stars, I'd probably give it like a solid 3.5. For all the ambition, for all the stuff that's in it, that's where I have to kind of land with it. I mean, I can't divorce myself from certain just aspects of production at this point when I watch movies, so I give a lot of credit to stuff like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely do that for this one. Were you at on this, Matt?
Yeah, 3.5, I agree. It's super fun to watch. Some of the action is flawed. I love the sets. As real or fake as they are, they're just fun to look at. But I feel like the biggest flaw is probably the lack of, like, memorable characters, probably. Characters that you care about. Especially the main guy. He's just...
The main... I think it's really the main guy.
Yeah.
I think the sidekicks are actually kind of cool. And even
yeah.
that one... The you know the negotiation with the criminals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's something there that like you get like the sense of like oh they're doing this because
mm-hmm.
they're going to get their freedom, but they're not necessarily trustworthy. And the Cyclops guy you know knows he's going to die,
mm-hmm.
and you got the goofy mm-hmm. magician that's kind of comic relief or whatever. And that's kind of weak too. But yeah, I mean I think it really does come down to just like the sort of lack of charisma and lack of like
mm-hmm.
quality to the main guy. He doesn't
mm-hmm.
you don't really give a shit about him for the most part.
Yeah.
And they do kind of fail at ever giving you a sense of like a fuller world. It's not I mean even at that wedding scene it's not like there's a whole bunch of people in this castle. It's like it's this castle and there's no town around it. There's I guess the implication is that there's already been a lot of decimation from the slayers and people, you know, villages are burned or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but it feels very kind of, it lacks,
kind of like
it tries to be epic,
almost.
Yeah, yes,
right.
Yeah, it's
just
he's
like a very
population.
One-dimensional person, like, in the beginning, he is kind of just a wimp, he's like weeping on the stairs, and then he just, you know, he's just kind of the golden boy throughout the rest, and he gets his special little
right.
multi-tool.
Yeah,
just, I don't know,
yeah, yeah. he's lacking in any kind of real, He doesn't really overcome anything to get. He just kind of whines and then decides, okay, I'll go. Yeah. And then immediately climbs a mountain, sticks his hand in the lava, and gets the
I'm just saying, if Liam Neeson would have survived, I think the princess would have been swayed maybe a different way. That's all I'm saying.
With she would have been taken, if you will. Exactly. It was
Why didn't they set it up so that he got the glaive at the very end? He gets it at the very beginning and then doesn't use it until the very end.
That's true. I think there is some.
It was like trying to give him like a hero's journey or something, maybe to try and develop his character.
Yeah, but I feel like it is too soon, though. Matt's right. Like, there's the structure of the quest is kind of haywire and kind of flawed and kind of. I mean, Zach calls this movie a slog, and I'm like, I like parts of it. I like it enough, but the second act is kind of a slog in some places. It's just like the fact that they go to see the seer. And then, I mean, they demonstrate, you know, that the monster's that powerful. And he's like, no, we have to go somewhere else. And so then they're like, okay, then they're going to go. And then he gets killed. And then it's like, okay, you know, I mean, the joke, like, okay, plan D. I mean, part of that is kind of interesting, kind of nice, though, because it's like, it's demonstrating, like, just how tough it is for them to even discover how to get there. But then it's kind of a letdown. They get there, and they wander around, a couple of them get killed, and then, you know... He throws the glaive a few times at the monster and kills it, and that's it. You know, it's not as strong an ending, is it?
Yeah.
I'm kind of talking myself down from the strong 3.5, I know, but I don't know. It's hard to divorce myself just from people wanting to make movies later.
I don't understand why the glaive just hovers there. See a shot of the monster, shot of the guy with his hand extended, shot of the glaive, shot of the monster, shot of the guy with the hand extended, and then it finally, like, strikes.
That was like another 20 minutes.
I know, it was like, when is it going to happen?
It's like Sanjiro, man. They look at each other, and then once it happens quick.
I was wondering about that. Was the monster's hand extended? Was it also exerting power over the glaive? Was it, like, this battle of wills to see who could control it? Was that what was going on?
I feel like it took too long.
Or was he just showing him what was going to happen to him? He's just showing him that there's a spinning thing. It's going to get you. It's coming for you. Don't worry about it.
The monster's kind of confused. He's like, maybe I'll shoot a fireball at it, and that doesn't work, and just keep staring at it. Like, just, I don't know.
Yeah, the standoff was kind of problematic. I think, like you said, it just comes down to sort of the fight choreography wasn't there. I mean, you don't want to see Wire Fu in a movie like this, but they could have...
No,
you
know, I do.
Maybe, yeah, just add that extra level.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so your objectified rating of...
I don't know.
Movie.
I feel like this movie is kind of like eating a Twinkie.
Right?
Like, there's some enjoyable parts of it, but there's a lot of, like, sadness and confusion in the middle. At the end, you just feel kind of empty and hollow and wondering what you did with your time. Yeah. Out of a five?
Oh, see, the five is great because you don't have to admit perfection if you see something you really like.
All right. But is too low?
Nothing is too low. It's your opinion, dude.
I'd say you could give it a healthy, solid.
A solid two out of five. To me, a two out of five is like kind of like saying, I probably could have lived without seeing it, but I don't completely regret that I saw it, but I'm not really going to solidly recommend that you see it.
I'll give it a 2.5 for the childhood closure.
Okay, the childhood closure should count for at least half.
Closure factor.
You're like, at least now I know what that Cyclops got crushed for.
Exactly.
Now I know why the Cyclops got crushed.
And you have a childhood memory and you can't place it.
I don't know. I think... I'm going to be quick about it and say I'm giving it a 3 for, like, a lot of similar reasons, but it made me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was funny. I was entertained. It was not the best or the worst movie I've ever seen. And, yeah, some parts were way, way too long. But I'm going to give it a 3. A solid 3, not a
solid 3?
2.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to split the difference. I'm going to give it an ethereal 2.5. At any given day, you could push me to a 3 or a 2.
you get to trump on this because you've got the real proper nostalgia factor for it.
Like I was saying, you know, like when I was a kid, I fucking hated this movie. Can I cuss?
Yes, you can.
Oh, good. I fucking hated this movie. Because...
No, the way iTunes works, there's no PG-13, which I wish there was. Because my podcast, it's like a curse a little bit, fine. But there's explicit or not. And it's like, if you're going to give me an explicit tag, then fuck you, iTunes.
Well, I've never really noticed. I mean, cause, like, kind of every word that comes out of Zach's mouth kind of sounds a little profane. But...
but he doesn't curse that much. He gives me a lot of crap for it.
Yeah. But you know, that said, if I did see this in a setting like the theater lounge or something, a
couple beers,
and had any kind of like substance in me, I'd probably be like, "Oh, this is like a 4 or something."
I feel like it would be so tricky because you would have to be occupied during the boring parts. Otherwise, exactly. You would find it like to me like that's the trick with alcohol. It's like, if you're going to have a good time, great. But if you can't control how good that time may or may not get,
yeah.
Like, I do not like being drunk and finding things tedious because it's like, I'm not going to be an agreeable person if
that's
I'm like at a party.
You get, like, the garlic cheese fries.
Yeah.
You're busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you're yeah, and then you got people to talk to.
Just imagine watching Kroll by yourself on a beautiful sunny day in the middle of the afternoon. What can you imagine? Like that? That just sounds.
Oh, that sounds
like,
terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It sounds like punishment.
Yeah.
Wow, that.
It does. That's why I think they use it in Pineapple Express because it's like they're stoners and like how miserable is their life?
Are they watching this?
They're watching Kroll in the background. Oh. at James Franco's place.
What?
Yeah. That's exactly how it is. But say it's like a dreary freaking Saturday in the winter and you just need a break from things and, you know, you got a couple buds or whatever. No pun intended. We're in weed country, so we have to, like...
I would watch The NeverEnding Story because it's like a
right,
better version
there are, of there are good ones. And it's shorter, too.
Yeah, it's shorter.
But sometimes you want that soundtrack, man. And the thing about... The thing that I like about... if I were by myself and everything and it was a Kroll time... Yeah, it does. Pretty similar.
Like the castle falling apart. Mm-hmm.
There's great times when you can go like wash the dishes and stuff. True, I miss that in movies. You know, it's like okay, this is the part when they're the soothsayer and murder and okay, I'm gonna
it's
go.
Great
I can kind of do this
to go make your gooseberry pie.
Make
your
gooseberry
pie.
Yes.
Does he actually call them gooseberries?
Yeah,
because gooseberries are like a real berry, right?
Right.
They don't look anything like the weird
only on
Kroll. Giant, whatever those
they ended
were.
Up on Earth somehow.
Yeah.
They made mention of gooseberry pie and
right.
Snow White.
That, yeah, that's right. It's like they
it's
have all these exotic sweeter. Names for the rest of the world, and then like this is like, I don't know, fuck it, gooseberry pie, I don't know.